The coronavirus pandemic has affected almost every aspect of our lives this year, the way plagues have always done throughout human history, and it will continue to shape society for years to come. Joining us now is Nicholas Christakis. He's a physician and sociologist at Yale and author of the new book, Apollo's Arrow, The Profound and Enduring Impact of Coronavirus on the Way We Live. Nicholas Christakis, welcome.
Peter, thank you so much for having me.
So vaccines are out the door, and it seems like we are at an important inflection point in this crisis. How close are we to the end of the pandemic?
Oh, goodness. I wish I could, join you in this tremendous enthusiasm. I mean, it is miraculous that we have manufactured or invented, rather, a vaccine. Plagues are an ancient threat. They have been a part of our history on this planet for thousands of years. We are not the first people alive to face this ancient threat, but we are the first generation ever to face it at a time when we can manufacture a specific countermeasure like a vaccine in real time. So it's a miracle, truly, and unprecedented that we have accomplished this. But I don't think that the vaccine heralds a rapid end to this pandemic, unfortunately.
Okay, no, I'm glad to know that, at least to be prepared. People should be prepared. And so to that point, walk us through how you think the next year or so, maybe longer, will go, especially as we need to get closer and closer to this concept known as herd immunity.
Herd immunity is an interesting idea from epidemiology. It's the claim that a population of people can be immune to a condition, even if not every individual within that population is immune. So, for example, if you vaccinate 96% of the population for measles, if one of the 4% of people who's not vaccinated gets measles, that individual can't find anyone to spread it to. They're surrounded by immune people. And so you don't get outbreaks. What that means is that you don't necessarily need to vaccinate everyone. There's this threshold that you need to reach. And that threshold depends actually on how infectious the disease is. Something like measles, which spreads really easily, each case of measles can create 16 or 18 new cases, requires a very high percentage. For seasonal influenza, you might only need to vaccinate 30% of the population. For SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, we need to vaccinate, there are varying estimates. Some people say 67%. I think the number is probably going to be closer to 50% before we reach, herd immunity. But it's going to take time to vaccinate whatever the minimum percentage of people is, 50, 60, or 70%. Right now, we've just invented the vaccine. We have to manufacture millions of doses. Each person might need 2 doses, so that's 600 million doses in this country. We need to distribute those doses, which is not easy. And most importantly, we need to persuade Americans to accept the vaccine. And I think all of that's going to take at least 9 months, maybe a year. We'll reach the end of 2021. It'll be the beginning of 2022 before we reach this herd immunity threshold due to vaccination. But the irony is, meanwhile, while we're doing all that, the virus is still spreading. So the point is, by the time we reach the beginning of 2022, we'll have reached this important milestone, this herd immunity milestone, either because at least, let's say, 50% of people have been vaccinated, so we'll reach this threshold artificially, or we'll reach it naturally through the natural spread of the virus.
When I'm looking forward to that time, and I'm feeling optimistic, I daydream about going to a restaurant. I think about what it would be like to get a haircut, to travel
yes.
like I used to go to the gym.
Yes.
And then when I'm at my worst, I actually wonder if any of those things that brought me joy before the pandemic will even be the same when this is over. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that things have shifted so much in the past 10 months or a year.
Yes.
How could we ever really go back? I mean, what do you think the enduring impact of this virus will be on us as people?
Right. Well, I mean, there's 2 parts to your question there. The first part is, how will the coming years unfold? So until we reach herd immunity, we're still going to be living in a changed world, wearing masks, avoiding gatherings, engaged in physical distancing. There'll be periodic school closures or business closures. So this immediate period, we're going to still be, let's say, under the epidemiological thumb of the virus until we reach this important herd immunity threshold. Now, we still have to recover psychologically, socially, and economically. We have millions of children who have missed school. We have tens of millions of Americans out of work. We have millions of businesses that have permanently closed. We have borrowed tons of money. We have rejiggered our lives. And to unwind a lot of those things and cope with them will take time. So then we're going to have this intermediate pandemic period. I think looking at centuries of the history of plagues, that period will take a year or two. So I think that gets us to the end of 2023, the beginning of 2024, before we really enter the post-pandemic period. And then I think it'll be a little bit like the Roaring Twenties 100 years ago after the 1918 pandemic.
So you've talked about the physical, but also in some sense, I wonder about the spiritual, because I don't think we've fully reckoned yet with the grief and the sadness of this pandemic.
I think the thing that's important to realize is that these experiences that we're having, the death of doctors, the feeling of loss, the loss of life, the loss of livelihoods, the loss of our way of life about which we grieve, these feelings of blaming other people or this exacerbation of socioeconomic inequality that the plague is bringing, all of these things which seem so unfair or unnatural or alien, the thing you have to remember is that plagues are not new to our species. They're just new to us. This sense of grief that you mentioned has been described for hundreds of years during times of plague. Plagues are in the Bible. They're in the opening of Homer's Iliad. They're in Shakespeare, in Cervantes. I mean, they are a part of the human experience. And as such, they elicit very deep and fundamental human sentiments like grief, like fear, like denial, but also like hope and optimism and love and other good feelings too. So it's complicated.
Yeah, it is. And let's just try to put this into some more historical context. You write in the book that some plagues have lasted for a very long time. The bubonic plague, 1400 years, and another iteration of it, I believe it was the Black Death, lasted on and off for 500 years.
Yes.
And yet we're surprised every time anew when one comes.
Yes. One thing which we have to sort of recognize about this virus is that, bad as it is, it's not as bad as these historic plagues. I mean, bubonic plague would kill 50% or 80% of people in a city in a very short order. Smallpox outbreaks among Native American populations would wipe them out, 95% of people dying. Ebola outbreaks in modern West Africa could sometimes reach attack rates and lethality rates of 80%. So this SARS-CoV-2 virus is bad, but nowhere near as bad as these historical plagues. But here's the thing. This virus could have been much more lethal. We're lucky. We're actually lucky it's not worse. And so this is why, for many years, the government, thankfully, has been preparing for global respiratory pandemics. And it's also why I'm so disappointed, candidly, in how we as a nation have done.
So when you put it that way, it makes me wonder if a contingent of people throughout history have always thought the pandemic or a pandemic was a hoax or a conspiracy of some kind. How have people seen this issue through time?
Thank you for mentioning that, because just like grief and the blaming of other people and some of those phenomena have been timeless, so have denial and lies. And in some ways, it's very human, right? I mean, nobody wants to believe that a plague is happening. I mean, denial is a very primitive and fundamental human defense. And lying about it has been seen, you know, from time immemorial. But this is why I had hoped for better from us. You know, I had hoped that as a rich, open democracy, you know, with the world's best scientists and the modern media, that, you know, we have reliable sources of information. And this is why I was hoping that with this plague, we might have seen a bit less superstition, a bit less lying, and a bit less denial.
Well, and then I hate to end this way, but you remind me that once we're on the other side of this crisis, there's no guarantee. In fact, there's a promise that it will happen again.
Yes. I mean, respiratory pandemics come every 10 or 20 years. Serious ones like the one we're in come only, you know, once every century or so. That's just on average. I mean, there's no guarantee we won't have another serious epidemic in 5 or 10 or 20 years. But I want to say something about grounds for hope and optimism, because I think one of the things you need to understand is that the virus is exploiting very deep and fundamental aspects of our common humanity. It It exploits our desire to touch and hug each other. It exploits our desire to befriend each other and spend time in groups. It takes advantage of our ignorance, and therefore it is refuted by knowledge and by the sharing of accurate information. So you could even say that the spread of germs is the price we pay for the spread of ideas. What this means is that you can turn that thing on its head, and what you can recognize is it is equally through the spread of ideas that we are going to beat the spread of germs. We're going to beat this virus precisely by working together, precisely by sharing information, precisely by recognizing we all have a shared interest in what happens to all of us.
Nicholas Christakis, medical doctor, sociologist at Yale, in these trying times, I should say to you, Happy New Year. I hope it is. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you for having me, and likewise to you and everyone listening.